Good evening, everyone. Thank you so much for being here. I taught a class from 6 to 9 p.m. years ago on Monday night, so I will try to use some engagement tricks as well. So, thank you so much for that introduction. So this work that I'm presenting on, I was part of the evaluation team at USC, which Dr. David Sloan and Dr. Luana Lewis led, and we were evaluating a nonprofit organization's efforts, multiple interventions, actually, and this is only a small component. We were evaluating one of the objectives around increasing access points to fruits and vegetables, and also there's a piece on physical activity. So I'll get started. I have no financial relationships to disclose. And so this is actually an effort, this organization, Community Health Council, some of you may be aware of them. They're actually a very interesting organization that they were established in 1992, and embedded within their mission is to address health inequities in a localized space, and they actually exist in South Los Angeles, and they're very focused on South Los Angeles. And there were two other poster presentations and another presentation from CHC personnel, actually, who worked on this project. The CDC awarded the CHC with a REACH demonstration grant in 2012, and this was a three-year grant, and so I was on the evaluation team. So CHC is a nonprofit, but they're community-based health education and policy. So as part of the last more than 20 years, they started with healthcare access issues, and they've kind of evolved to focus on policy and planning as well, which is very different actually than a lot of CBOs in this space. In terms of the project description, this objective, as I said, was focused on schools. The justification, I think I won't really get into that. Most of us know the importance of schools to address childhood obesity. They're very good points of entry for interventions because, you know, really high attendance rates, they have physical activity, you know, a PE curriculum. More recently in the policy environment, I think everyone here is probably interested in food and nutrition. So the 2010, kind of the policy changes around the school food as really kind of the policy environment has shifted quite a bit. Don't know who we have from Los Angeles, but I'll speak very briefly about South Los Angeles. South Los Angeles, formerly South Central Los Angeles, is actually a very large space. It's about 51 miles squared. So it's a large space. Within that, you have various neighborhoods. It used to be 28, and right now they're trying to consolidate. So I think we're at 25 neighborhoods within that space. And what you see is actually a high I come from California, but you actually have these disparities within the county, and South Los Angeles is a high disparity community relative to other communities in Los Angeles County. And so this is 2011 data, actually, because the project was, this is our baseline. This is from the Los Angeles County Health Survey. And so what you see are, you know, among adults, about 70% obese or overweight within South Los Angeles. The uninsured status has changed, but at the time, 2011, you actually had about 40% of the population was uninsured, the adults, and sizable, about a third were in our state Medicaid program known as Medi-Cal. And then, so here you see a relative to other health districts. So you see South LA at the bottom. This is the rate, obesity and overweight rate. So the darker blue is the obesity rate for adults. That was in the previous slide, but now you can compare it across health districts. So South Los Angeles has the highest obesity rate among adults in Los Angeles County, and has the second highest obese and overweight rate. And among children, it's a 30% obese and overweight rate among children in the community. So our study aims to really, I'm actually not going to be focused so much on the evaluation today, because what actually happened with these focus groups turned more into the rich data really was reflective and gave us a deeper sense of kind of three different neighborhoods in South Los Angeles. So I'll give you some, I'm going to be talking about some of the findings. But the purpose was to improve our understanding of neighborhood level barriers in these three particular neighborhoods and the facilitators to access to healthy food and active living environments among adolescents and adults in South Los Angeles. And so CHC actually selected three high schools as a REACH intervention site. And these high schools were selected by CHC because they had a school-based health clinic run by a community health clinic, or an FQHC. And actually two of the three also had a school-based community garden. So this idea, they have resources on campus, there's a clinic, there's actually a garden. And our question really was about, what are kind of awareness, utilization barriers, other barriers that exist. So the resources are on these large campuses. But none of the schools actually had shared use, so adults were not allowed on campus when school was out of session. And so we really, I think everyone here is aware of the social ecological framework. And with our focus groups, really we were interested in the individual barriers and facilitators, so knowledge, attitude, attitude beliefs, social health behaviors around these resources. And it's not only inside of the school. We actually had more than half of the questions were outside in the community. So we asked around walking, behaviors around walking to school, fast food. And I'll talk a little bit about that as well. So we use a qualitative research design. We chose to use focus groups, actually, because within qualitative research design, you could have used interviews. Obesity, and I really like the comment about, we didn't use obesity at all in these focus groups. You don't use that word. It's much more accessible to talk about food or talk about specific resources and nutrition. So I think something that's a very important kind of idea. So because we're talking about physical activity and nutrition, focus groups were appropriate. It's not that sensitive of a topic. I've also worked with HIV-positive populations and breast cancer prevention. Those, the design might have been interviews or surveys. But focus groups have been used extensively. By a show of hands, who has personal experience working with focus groups? Okay, good. Then I'll kind of go through some of the first slides a little faster. But we actually had two components to the focus group. So we had the traditional focus group script, which I think everyone here has had experience with that. A lot of time and effort to having an adult focus group and a student. And here you have just a sample of topic areas. This is for the student version and some of the questions. And there's some overlap, so we asked both adults and students around the off-campus nutrition resource environment. But we also asked just students around the school nutrition resource environment. That was a huge component, actually, of their script. And then at the bottom, actually, I don't know if you have experience with this. I haven't seen it as much, actually. We used a pre-focus group questionnaire. Usually, I've seen sociodemographics asked, but we actually had a pretty detailed, with a lot of closed-ended questions around health behaviors, some questions from national data surveys. We had some health-reported data. It took about 15 to 20 minutes. But we thought that was really important to provide context for our participants, for ourselves after, to understand who came and kind of the ongoing health behaviors. So I'll be reporting on both of those pieces. So in terms of the procedure, since I think a lot of people have experience actually with focus groups, they were between 60 to 90 minutes. They were stratified by adult and they were high school students. And then with the adult groups, actually there were two schools that are majority Hispanic and high ESL. Populations, so we plan to have Spanish groups at those specific schools. Let's see. So I'll just highlight a recruitment challenge, with which many of you may be familiar with focus groups, is that groups are often smaller than expected. So we had we put a lot of effort into recruitment, but we weren't surprised at actually the most effective recruitment. It wasn't those really beautiful flyers we put in local Starbucks or local kind of places within a half mile radius. Our recruitment actually was most effective with after school programs, parent center representatives, people who were in communication, and frequent contact more or less with community members and students. And we used Invivo. If anybody has any questions, I've also used Atlas TI and Deduce. So if you have questions around using Invivo, I had a really positive experience using Invivo for this. That was a qualitative data software we used for this project. For this component, in terms of our participants, we had 28 high school students and 47 adults from the three high school sites. It's conducted over a year ago now. In terms of the age, normal high school students, average age 16. Our adults were average age 47. We were very surprised. Our students actually were a good mix of male and female, but just like public health, we had more females than males, a sizable number in terms of our adult groups. Which is actually something that we already knew kind of coming in. We were really grateful for that 10% male. We tried to accommodate to that, but that's, I think, a challenge, especially in low-income communities and in other communities, I'm sure. But a majority vast majority were African-American or Hispanic. By school site, these numbers, actually, the racial ethnic composition varied. We actually had two of the majority Hispanic sites did have majority Hispanics, and then the one neighborhood that is majority African-American, the focus group actually had a majority of African-Americans. And we didn't seek participants, we didn't target actual participants. So in terms of the on-campus nutrition resource environment, or cafeteria food, vending machines, etc., about half of the students reported regularly eating in the school cafeteria, and these are students at all three high schools. Everyone has free or reduced meal eligibility. So cost is not a barrier, but you see very low rates, which has been found elsewhere. And about 14.2% reported regularly skipping lunch as a behavior. Across the board, all of them said in their focus group that they skip lunch every so often, but about 14.2%, they weren't bringing food from home. They were skipping lunch altogether. When we discussed barriers to healthy eating, what actually emerged, we had heard from community partners that, they think the food is nasty, or these kind of ideas of stigma, their friends aren't going. But the number one barrier actually turned out to be, across the four groups and the sites, was that they disliked waiting in long lines, and they didn't feel they had enough time. We found it was 30 minutes. You only have 30 minutes for a lunch period. And so a majority of students in all the focus groups said, this is a huge issue. They didn't have time to go and sit down and have a meal in the cafeteria. The lines were too long or it was too far away from their last period. They also didn't like food that was perceived to be frozen. So they actually, conversely, one of the facilitators, they really liked fresh food. They thought some of the new fresh food was actually really, their new salad bars, they really liked that when they had time to kind of sit down and have that. So I think that's a really good finding. Very few after-school nutrition education and cooking programs are available, so there's a lack of available or standalone programs. If they existed, one of the programs actually was physical activity and nutrition, which is fine, but just the lack of programs is a problem of nutrition programs. And then the school-based gardens, actually, there's a high level of awareness and interest, which is great. This is perceived to be an asset of those two schools, but very few students used it or knew how to access or use it. So the students felt that that was an issue that they knew about. They didn't know how you could go in or who kind of ran it or how they could have access to it. And then we had one participant who, I'll just read this quote, he actually participated in the Sierra Club. He said, "We planted rosemary, greens, broccoli, and lots of vegetables. I was in the Sierra Club, and not only did we learn about the liquor stores and the problems, but also to garden and what else you can do." So it's very positive. And then actually the students started asking him how they could join and how they could get more information. So they came up with recommendations. We had the students brainstorm ideas, and they're similar to what I've already said, more fresh food, increase the variety of food. Really the big one was the third, increase entry points, expand access, address this time issue. People were interested in eating in the cafeteria, but they didn't feel that, they actually could do that. So let's see. And improving access to school gardens is also really important. One of the kids said, "Let everyone go, not everyone gets to go. Have a sign up so it isn't chaotic, then everyone has a chance to go." So this high level of interest in going. In terms of off-campus nutrition resource environment, there's this problem of availability of fast food, especially around schools and homes. So majority of students, even if they ate lunch, consumed off-campus fast food and junk food. Popular junk food, not surprising to people here, was chips, soda, energy drinks, and blended caffeinated drinks. From our questionnaire, we found about 39% of students reported drinking more than at least two sodas in the last 24 hours. And this community has a high, actually, consumption of sugar-sweetened beverages. Among this students and adults, I don't know if you've heard the term food swamp before, that there's so much fast food or unhealthy food that you get stuck and kind of mired in, like the unhealthy food. And so overwhelmingly, the students and adults talked about just there's a lot of fast food. There's a lot of food everywhere you go. And then one of the students said, "We all eat fast food. That is all we eat, especially around the school because there's junk food restaurants across the street." So in terms of food resources, the individual who purchased food was mostly the woman in the household. They talked about we asked about their food purchasing behavior, and not surprisingly, price was a key factor. And so liquor corner stores were used for eggs or milk, but they were available. And then here you kind of see some of the sites that they identified. Interestingly, Costco came up by a small number of focus group participants, but Costco is not located in South LA. So a small number of people were going outside of the community. A majority were consuming or purchasing food within the community. You see kind of some similarities, large grocery stores. We also see actually what's really popular in Los Angeles are these Hispanic-run supermarkets, El Tapatío, El Super, and these are places actually with circulars. So people will go on the day of the specials to purchase food there. And just to kind of highlight alternative food sources, a very small number mention alternative food sources, but from the first site, they actually mentioned the farmer's market. There are three farmer's markets in South Los Angeles, but very few people went or were aware of farmer's markets. Very few high school students knew what a farmer's market actually was when we asked them. And then from site three, the food bank. Someone mentioned the importance of the food bank for their own kind of to have food in their home. So I won't go into detail. These slides are provided as handouts, but I think, you know, I'm really interested in nutrition education and policy, but because I'm interested in obesity policy, I study physical activity. So I also included these slides for your own information. I think we also know childhood obesity, part of the issues, higher sedentary behaviors, mindless eating. And so this is information about the participants that you have. I would like to highlight the importance of focus group type data, because from our questionnaire, the most common barrier actually for students to physical activity was a lack of motivation. They said we're lazy. Overwhelmingly, we heard we're just lazy. I'm lazy or he's lazy, and that's why we don't exercise. The second was lack of transportation, and the third was lack of time. You see, if you have the time for it, like, it's hard if you are a lazy person, in the words of one of the students. But then when we asked them about safety, we particularly asked about safety, so you don't see safety come up. You know, actually, 42% of students said that they felt unsafe, somewhat unsafe, or unsafe to use local physical activity resources. And then overwhelmingly, the students and adults as parks, you know, common non-school community kind of space said, you know, actually that's unsafe, that's where gangs hang out. We don't go there, or we don't ride our bikes there, someone's gonna take our bike. Or one community, riding a bike was a sign that you were a gang member, you were selling drugs. And so it's very interesting, I think, outside of the community, to hear about, you know, safe routes to school. It's important to think about this, or uses of parks. And then parents said, it's unfortunate these kids are scared. They would rather be in the house playing video games than going to the park because they don't feel safe. So those are very important things to think about. It doesn't mean we stop, but it means we consider this in designing appropriate interventions. Let's see. A positive was overwhelmingly walking groups, people who are already engaging and walking within groups to kind of overcome safety barriers. That's something that can be used. So in terms of key recommendations or key takeaways, let's see, I'll only focus on the healthy eating behaviors. There are policy or institutional changes. For example, we created actually a health brief and we gave that to LAUSD since they're revising their wellness policy right now. But increasing lunchtime, there's a lot of it's difficult to do, but increasing lunchtime might be a way to do that. And there's actually more studies, people who are aware, that lunchtime is associated. Kids who have less than 30 minutes consume less fruits and vegetables than kids who have more than 30 minutes for lunch. Farm to school, farm to home, now that I'm hearing this, reducing the queues and the wait times, increasing the garden access, increasing the availability of nutrition education programs for students and for parents. And this one, it's more difficult to address these competing unhealthy food outside of school, but I do kind of put that out for people from a policy or program perspective. How do we address this availability of unhealthy food outside of schools and communities? And so, thank you. That being said, I have at the end, kind of, these are focus group resources I recommend for individuals interested in this type of method.